Folks, thanks very much for coming out early to listen to my talk. What I'd like to talk about today is work that we've been doing in Rosebery, looking at environmental stability of predictions using genomic information. And first I'd like to list the co-authors, not just acknowledgements, but this uses data for a large number of people, and so it's important that we realise the input that they have had into the results that I'm presenting. So this is a simple diagram of G by E. Why we're interested in stability is that we might have different cultivars and we'll want to plant them over a range of target environments. And it may be that in some of those target regions the environment differs and we get re-ranking. So if we look at the differences between E1 and E2, we can see that basically the ranking's the same, it's just that this is size, that cultivar A has just got proportionally bigger than the other cultivar. So there's a change of scale there in the environmental effect. But if you go from E1 and E2 environments to E3, we can see that there's a change in re-ranking, that this cultivar here that produced small fruit in the first two environments now is producing about the largest fruit. So this is the issue if we're trying to use information from here to select for this environment here and we're unaware of that re-ranking. So the motivation is that the genetic variation, we have this model that it may be affected by a few large QTL effects and many small background QTLs as well. And stability of performance across commercial deployment environments is important for cultivar selection, as I've just talked about. And in addition, if we can include more data in our predictions, then we increase the accuracy of those predictions, so we increase the confidence of the behaviour of those genotypes and the ranking of the genotypes. And a typical way to look at G by E is with multi-environment trials, and this is what's done in forestry or in crop plants, but in horticulture or tree plants, these are extremely expensive. First of all, because of the size of the experimental unit, and then secondly, because of the length that's needed to run these trials. And we have many small independent breeding programs that collect data, but there's little knowledge of relationship between these programs that hinders any opportunity we may have to combine them based on pedigree or clonal replication. And the solution we're proposing is that we can use the SNP arrays to characterise shared chromosome segments among germplasm that are evaluated by independent breeding programs. And that's typically called genomic prediction. So the conceptual framework of this is that the historical breeding data represents a sample of environment. We're unsure of what the particular environment may particularly be and what characteristics of those environments may influence re-ranking, but we consider it as a sample of an environment. And it's that the SNP arrays can characterise QTL alleles, those major effect genes, genomic regions, and we can also use them to estimate realised relationships to model the background genetic effects. And we might use a model like the model we're proposing is here, where we've got a main environment effect, a interaction of the large QTL effect with the environment, and the interaction of the background genomic, background small genetic effects with the environment. And the idea, the concept is that we use this to combine the data, look at the patterns in the data, and then we'll generate hypotheses about what environmental differences may be driving those. So I'd like to give a couple of examples of the work we've done so far in Rosebery. And the first is looking at fruit maturity date in sweet cherry. And so this is data that's been from the Rosebery program and the WSU cherry breeding program, but we've also collated data from an INRA variety trial at Viran. Is there any French speakers here? Because my French is almost as bad as my Hawaiian. But anyway, another site in France at Balladran, which is a variety testing site, and another variety collection in Forli in Italy. And this diagram is sort of arranged on trying to match up latitudes, so we can see that the latitudes are fairly similar for these four sites. Here gives an indication of the shared cherry accessions amongst the locations, and on the diagonals, so we've got these four locations and fruit maturity date has been assessed over, for 2 years at each of those locations. Not the same year, but for 2 years. So along the diagonal is the number of accessions that have been assessed in that year at that location, and on the off diagonals are the number of shared accessions that were assessed in the pairwise comparison. So we can see here, if we compare Prosser with Forley, very few accessions were in common. The other point to note here is that genotype information was available from these four locations, but not from this location. But all of these individuals were genotyped by one of these sources. This is a PCA plot of the structure of that germplasm, and unfortunately, it's not in colour. But what we can see is that this the germplasm from Prosser, which was the largest sample of germplasm, pretty much covers the space of the genetic structure. So that's a fairly broad sample of the germplasm. From Balladran and Boran, again, all of the sites cover a space in that genetic structure. So we've got quite overlapping germplasm. We've run the model, and this is what we get out, predictions for the main effects of the environment. So we can see in fruit maturity is generally about the same across years, and it's a little bit earlier in the European sites than it is in the Western Australians, Washington State sites, sorry. Washington State sites. And just to confirm that this is based on data that's adjusted for that unbalance. So this is what you'd expect if that whole set of germplasm was assessed at each of those locations and over those 2 years. So it accounts for that. It's not biased by the unbalance. We can estimate parameters for the background genetic effects. And for fruit maturity date, we have quite high heritability. This is a narrow sense heritability, suggesting that what you see is pretty much what you get, which, you know, accounts with expectations, which is good, although it's a little bit lower at Prosser. And this is the correlation of genetic effects down here, and we can see that between the European sites, extremely highly correlated. So basically, everything performs with the same ranking throughout across those three locations. And it's quite good correlation with the Prosser site. And these are just the correlations between years at the different locations. So if we look at this diagrammatically, what I've done is taken the average of the different accessions predicted for these three locations and the average of the accessions predicted at Prosser. And because we've got a high correlation, we've got a really nice regression type line here. And that's what correlation is. What we can see that those accessions that perform that are late in the European sites are also late in the Washington State sites, and obviously the same here. One thing to point out here, I'd like to point out to you, is this is a progeny in the Washington State breeding program. So this has not been assessed in Europe. Okay, but because we've got this high correlation based on the genomic effects, we can predict its performance in the European sites. So this may be useful if Washington State is thinking about trying to target European locations, or if we look at other locations. We can also predict the effects of the background SNPs, and we can see that this is using a model that assumes a normal distribution of SNP effects. So we've got a large number of SNPs that have zero, very small effect on fruit maturity today, but we've got SNPs that have got somewhat more effect on fruit maturity date. So we can use this to also look at some of the, try and find some QTL associations if that's of interest. The next example I'd like to present is of sweetness in peach assessed using soluble sugar content, and that's from the rosebreed data. And so here, again, here's this tape. We've taken data from three locations, from South Carolina, Arkansas and Texas, and we've left out the Californian one because that's got some quite different relationships in it that uses hybrid material. So the first thing to notice here, again, is this shared table of shared accessions across the locations. In this case, it's more extreme that we don't have anything that's planted across those locations. Okay? So there's nothing in clonally to connect up this data. However, again, we can use this genomic model and use the characterisation of those shared chromosome segments to combine the data. And again, it's small to fit it on, perhaps with the time I've got, because you just stood up, I could have made a couple of slides out of this, but we've got quite a stronger structure in this germplasm than we had in the apple germplasm, that we've got the material from South Carolina that sort of seems to occupy a wide amount of this space here, and the Arkansas material is a subset, essentially, of that germplasm, and the Texas germplasm is a little bit removed from this germplasm. However, the models will account for this structure in the predictions. And so here is a PCA plot of the structure of that of the G by E. So what we have here is vectors of increasing sweetness at the six locations. So this along this vector, we would expect individuals that lie out here to have higher sugar content or higher SSC in the South Carolina environment when it was assessed in 2012. Here, this is the Arkansas environment assessed in 2012. So what we can see from it is five of the environments seem to group quite tightly. So the correlations between them probably around about 0.8 to 0.9. So we've got a similar situation to what I showed you in Cherry, that we can, we're pretty confident that if we take stuff that is assessed in this environment, we can take it into this environment. If it's elite in one environment, it'll be elite in the other environment. However, we've got this environment out here, which the correlations are somewhat lower. And the question then becomes, what may be driving this? So in summary of what I've presented today, genomic information can be used to model genetic relationships. Not particularly mind-shattering statement, but we can use that. And it has been used in a large number of crops and animals now. And genomic approaches can be used to combine historical performance data into a single analysis that previously we weren't really able to do unless we made some pretty strong assumptions. We can extend the models to incorporate known QTLs. That hasn't been done in this presentation here, and that's the issue about there is how do we characterise the variation in those QTL regions to incorporate them into the models. And once we do a pattern analysis, and if we find there's a pattern, then we can start to we do a pattern analysis to identify those main trends, and then we can use this G by E analysis to increase prediction accuracy in local environments because we're using all this data that other people have collected that are highly correlated with our performance, so it improves accuracy, it reduces the standard error of our predictions, and we can predict performance in untested environments, such as in the peach example where we could predict, Washington State cherry example where we've got breeding progeny that's only evaluated in Washington State, but we can predict performance in the European environments. So if anybody's got, this is cherry and peach that I've talked about today, but in rose breed, you're aware we're working with a number of crops, and particularly strawberry and apple, we're also looking at this stuff. So if anybody's got any of this sort of data, not necessarily genotyped, as I said, because we've got a fair bit of that genotypic information, we're really interested to try and incorporate it into the analyses just to improve our sampling of environments. So thank you.